We're in for a ride. Got some entertainment ahead, my friends. I got a chance to meet Jamie as a result of this pandemic stuff that we're dealing with, and I don't know if or when we might have met otherwise, but we had the opportunity to work together on bringing a couple of different groups together, and that group continues to thrive today. I'm really, really thrilled about that. Anyway, it's my great pleasure to introduce Jamie from Hanford.
Great. Thank you, everybody. Buddy, great to be here. Great to be sober. I'm just absolutely blessed that some of my closest friends in this program, in this area, are here tonight. As Bill was saying, I met him as a result of COVID, as a result of this pandemic. And you know, I guess if anything, the theme is with me and being a drunk recovered is that everything that was meant for harm turned out pretty good most of the time. In fact, everything is actually for my ultimate good is my theme, if I could share anything. And it certainly was true in meeting this guy. He's been a real, real blessing to both Chris and I, Chris, my wife. And he's the organizer of a lot of things that are great here in Visalia. As you said, we're from Hanford. And then also, I have Pete and Sean here from Hanford. Sean has allowed Pete to spend a voluminous amount of time with me because I take all the energy to try to get well. And Pete has been a real, real blessing and a real, real friend, in my life as well as Sean. And I'm grateful that you guys are here. And I'm grateful to meet the new folks here as well. Thank you very much for being here. You know, it's crazy. I look around this room and I don't know, should I explain it to those of you who are online? And by the way, a shout out to Mike Kelly as well, who I saw is out there as well. And, great to have you there. Mike, you've been a wonderful Zoom companion in the program over the last, year or so. But this room, with the nice oriental style rug and the ferns hanging and the little Swedish rocker thing over in the corner and nice comfy chairs. You know, when I was about 16 or 17, way back in, you know, the 1800s, this was the kind of place that we would gather and get fucking hammered, man. Excuse my language, but it was wonderful. You'd have like, the only difference is we would have a big old table in the middle of the room, you know, filled with various, treats, lots of tricks, and we'd have a big old bong filled with wine, and then we'd have wine and beer and stuff like that. And it all started out very, very, you know, just, you know, it was like, we would be talking about music and is McCartney really talking in that record when you play it backwards? And I know you guys don't get what I'm talking about, but anyway, we started out with the best of intentions and just all ended up in a mess on the floor at the end of the morning, actually. And so it's kind of cool to be in a beautiful place like this. And to be sober, because I didn't think that was ever going to be a part of my life. I was born here in California. I was left in an orphanage by my mom. She was only about 19 or 20 years old. I was born in Hoag Hospital in Orange County, and then she pulled me out of there, or they pulled me out of her. And brought me down to an orphanage and placed me in there because my mom was brought out from upstate New York to have me because back then at that time it was not a very good thing for a woman to have a kid out of wedlock. I mean it was shameful, and I think that colored my mom's life the rest of her life. I think she had a challenge maybe about that because she never, ever, ever wanted to talk about how I was born, what happened, what, you know, what some of the early days, because she felt guilty about it. She wrote a letter to my dad. My dad was the type of guy that said, hey, you know what, that's my kid, and he drove across the country from New York, took my mom, married her, went to Tijuana for a honeymoon, came back, grabbed me, and brought me back to New York State. And I was raised in New York. So I am a Californian, but not really. So it's hard to say. But anyway, I'm about 4 years old, maybe five. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of toys. There was a lot of kids after me. Mom was upstairs with a bad headache, nursing a hangover. Dad was laying on the couch watching the ball game, the Yankees, if I remember correctly, and I probably don't, but I think it would have been the Yankees, and he was having a beer, and everybody was just, I must have been a weekend night, somewhere to a weekend night. Maybe it was even a Sunday night. But I was about 4 or 5 years old, and we didn't have any toys, so I was playing with utensils, kitchen utensils. And my dad always thought that that was a lot better than the way he had it, because when he was growing up, all he had was a deck of cards to play with. And he used to push them around the floor and they pretend they were cards. And so he thought that was an upgrade to have a fork and a knife to keep myself entertained and occupied. So what does a four-year-old do with a knife? Well, he finds the first electric plug that he can. And proceeds to stick it in there. Normal thing, right? Normal thing for kids to just be curious and to take something and put it in there. I've heard of it happening before. But what I haven't heard of is a kid going back two more times and sticking it in there. To where my father was very concerned. He jumped up and said, what the hell are you doing, you idiot? And I think that's actually what he did, because I mean, that's what he always said anyway. So Dad was concerned at that point. And I would have to say that was my first high. That was my first experience of getting altered, because that's what I was about. I felt the vibration in the room. I felt the vibration of Mom and Dad were not very happy with each other. She got married way, way too young. I don't think he was her Prince Charming. He certainly thought she was a nut, fruitcake, and yet together they had a bunch of kids. And I just think that they were just unhappy, and the vibe was picked up by me. So I thought, I need to get different here. So I went over to that plug, and I guess I pushed it in a couple of times, and then each time it felt bad, but not that bad. Because I kept doing it again. So on we go to my first beer with Dad, watching the ball game once again. Dad brings out the Utica Club, which you guys may never have heard of, but that was the local beer in upstate New York where I grew up. And he had a glass there, and I guess he saw me looking at it or something. He goes, yeah, hey, Jimmy, you want to try it? And I went, okay. And it was the worst, most foul thing I've ever tasted in my life. And yet, within a few minutes, I asked for it again. I was done. I was hooked. I found something that was so different and so way above my common situation that I was growing up in, that I just was fired up about it. I was excited about it. And fast forward to 16 years old when I first got really, really, I mean, where I got so drunk that somebody had to carry me home. They left me on the front lawn, and that's where I stayed, you know, for most of the night. And that's how I drank. That's how I drank. I drank until I was gone. I was totally blacked out, until there was nothing. There was no consciousness left. It just went down for the count, and that was it. And in the beginning, I was a really cheap drunk. I mean, my friends would get all the beers, because I'd drink three of them, I'd shoot them really quick, and I'd be down, and that would be it. And then I'd wake up, and I always in a strange place, always in a situation that I didn't know where I was, what I was about. And that's how I drank for a long time, until I got through college, and I started to be able to handle a little bit more, and a little bit more, and a little bit more, and a little bit more. And that's how I drank. I proceeded to just live a life where everything was colored and tinged and infused by alcohol. Everything. Everything had something to do with alcohol. Was there drugs going on? Of course there was. Yes, they were there. They were always there. But they were just an after... They were an aperitif. They were an afterthought. They weren't the main show. The main meat of my life was beer, wine, and tequila. And tequila came later in my life, and what an incredible mistress she was. I mean, she's just amazing. I'd never tasted or touched anything like that in my life. In fact, you know, these days I've been delivered from being obsessed or being addicted or being like walking around thinking about alcohol all day long. But there is one thing that still crosses my mind every now and then. And that is the taste of tequila on a woman's lips. I don't know what it is about a tequila kiss. It always started out so great. The tequila kiss always starts out so great. And next thing you know, it's the tequila screaming and the tequila yelling and the tequila throwing things at each other. And the slamming of the doors. And all the stuff, by the way, that I heard from my folks that I'd learned growing up, I thought that's how you had relationships. You were supposed to throw things and scream and yell and threaten each other and sometimes actually follow through with those threats. And it was all just part of my tequila experience. I thought it was normal. I just thought that's what it was about. And it just got worse and worse and worse. Had an early marriage that was ended as soon as it started. Then went ahead from there and met a gal, came out here to California, met a gal from was just absolutely lovely. She didn't drink. And at that time, I stopped drinking as well. And we stayed together for a little while. But I got bored of her. She got bored of me. And that was the end of that. And so then I thought, well, you know what? I know what the answer is. I'm going to go to Mexico. Yeah, that's the problem. All the women I've been with speak English. I need to find somebody that doesn't speak my language. And so I ended up down there. And started drinking anew and started going through the whole process again and found myself back right where alcohol always leads me, which is just mayhem. Have you guys ever seen that Allstate, is it the Allstate commercial or something where the guy is mayhem? That was me. You could always count on Jamie. He would always let you down every single time. I mean, I always was, it was just always a problem. In fact, I separated myself from a lot of people who were dear to me, like my kids, because I just created so much problems. I didn't think I did, but as I got sober, I found out it was always me. It was always me. I always thought it was the ex-wives. I always thought it was the bad bosses that somehow I was unlucky to get. It's not. It never was. It was always me. It was always I was the one that brought the circus and the clowns. And they were just trying to get along. And I just thought, you know, I'm going to just try to mess things up. And that's what I did. I want to talk a little bit about sponsorship for a minute. Because it's been so important to me. It wasn't early on. I had a lot of sponsors. I had a guy who was a Supreme Court, California Supreme Judge. And I thought he was going to solve me. And he gave up on me pretty quick. I had another sponsor. The guy was a pianist at a hotel in San Diego. And, he was a wonderful guy, but I guess I just wasn't listening to what he had to say. And then, I just kept going through sponsor after sponsor after sponsor. And the reason is they kept telling me that I needed to read the book and take the steps. And when they got to that point, I was like, I'm gone. Why in the world? I'm here for just the socialization. Let's just hang out and talk. And I'll tell you everything you ever want and didn't want to know about me. And you can help cure me somehow. I didn't want to do any work at all. And that's another issue in my life is I guess I still am, and I'm getting a lot better, but I was very, very lazy about this program. So I spent 13 years not in sobriety, but in dryity. I was dry. I wasn't sober. And so then I went back out for another 13 years, and then I came back, which is where I'm at right now. I came back in 2008, 2014, in April of 2014, I got sober. I was chained to a pipe in Chula Vista, California. And to this day, I am still grateful to Officer Cortez of the Chula Vista Police Department. Because if it wasn't for him, maybe I'd still be out there. Maybe I'd be dead. I don't know. But I think of all these things now as blessings. All these crappy things. All my ex-wives. All the situations at work that I had, all the people, everything, I think of it as a blessing in disguise because it brought me here to this place tonight to be able to share with you a little bit about it. And it may not help you tonight, but here's the thing I will tell you, that more than likely I will drive home sober tonight. There's a really good chance that I probably won't pick up tonight. And that's what it's about. Now, if you get the same reaction from sitting here and being here among us here, that's great. But honestly, I was taught, and I believe this to be true, that it's about me staying sober. And I found out that unless someone like Bill, when someone like Bill comes along and calls you on the telephone, because there's been times when I said no to Bill, and you know, you don't say no to Bill because Bill is a salesperson. He always comes back. And he asks for the clothes one more time. And so there we are. I mean, he's always there. He's always asking. And finally, I say yes because, you know, honestly, when you say no, it takes something out of your program. A couple things I wanted to share about what's helped me in my program. Number one, like I said, sponsorship. I believe it's key to have somebody in your life that you can develop a relationship with, that you can feel totally comfortable with to share who you are. And the sponsor I have now is that guy, is that person. And I'm blessed by it. And I believe also that you need the spiritual practice in this program. It tells us that in page, 83, 84, 85, 86, that you need to have, and by the way, if I start talking, sounding like you need to do this, you need, please raise your hands and tell me to change the theme, because really what I want to share is what I've done for me. I can't tell you what to do. I know how I feel. Anytime, I always thought red lights were just suggestions. I didn't think that was something we were really supposed to obey. But I always wanted to be able to share where I'm coming from, and sometimes I don't do that. I have a tendency to, you know, wag my finger. Please forgive me. I don't mean to do that. All I can say is that reading those last few pages, and the way that happened, and how am I doing on time? Am I okay? All right. So the way that happened, I got sober at a place called South Bay Pioneers down in Chula Vista, California. It was a sober living home, which I never went to. I just went to the meetings. I wasn't a resident. But there was an old gal there, and her name was Mary Kay. And she was one of those women that her whole life had been spent at a bar. And she probably was very, very good looking in her youth. And she probably used those looks to keep her drunk for 20, 30 years. I don't know how long she was out. She was out there a long time, and she'd be at that bar every single night. So she knew every freaking scam that men could come up with. And by the way, we can come up with some incredible stuff, as you women will probably attest to. And Mary Kay knew it all. And she was so funny, and she was so clever. And she just knew you. She just got you. She was probably at that time, she's probably 90 if she's still living, but she was probably in her, she was, what, 80s, early 80s. And I was at a speaker's meeting on a Saturday night, which we used to have there. We had a big dinner, and then we have a speaker's meeting. And this gal came in from Boston. And the gal was, she was very attractive, very attractive. So right away, I'm on the edge of my seat. And I'm like, okay, well, what do you got here tonight? And Mary Kay is sitting behind me. And this gal is talking about saying, basically reading those last three or four pages of the chapter every single day. And I was on my seat listening to it. But I wasn't listening to her. I was looking at her chest. I mean, I was just enthralled by her. And Mary Kay taps me on the shoulder. And it was like a clang-clang moment. She taps me on the shoulder and she leans forward. She goes, "You're just thinking of all the nasty things you can do to that girl, aren't you?" I was like, she had me, man. She caught me. And that catching me like that, for some reason, all of a sudden, God tapped me on the other shoulder and said, you need to start taking this thing seriously. You need to stop screwing around and just treating your meetings like the dating game and start to really listen to what's being taught. And I decided I was going to take that idea that she had, and I've done it almost ever since. And it's been a great boon for me, because it told me, basically, it talks about, number one, you don't ever pray for yourself. And I always prayed. That's the only person I did pray for. I didn't pray. I didn't care about the rest of you. I prayed for me. I prayed, get me out of this situation. I never prayed for anybody other than myself. Maybe I prayed for my kids or a close family member or something. But for the most part, I just prayed about me. And I had to turn things around and start praying about Bill, about Sean, about Pete, about David. I mean, I had to focus on you guys to get out of myself. And also, the other thing that it did, it took away the freaking resentments that I have for you. I don't even know some of you, and I've already got resentments towards you. I apologize. Please forgive me. It's just what I'm about, who I am. You know, Mike came in, he was telling a great story, and all of a sudden, you start building up stupid resentments. You know, and the fact is I have to step back and pause, which is another thing that's mentioned, and that's the same few pages. Pause before you say some fucking stupid thing. And I've had to really work hard on that, because that's my MO. But I would pause, and I'd start to ask that you would get everything that I want. Somebody in a meeting had told me that. Pray that they get everything that you want. And I was like, that's stupid. And I started doing it. And it wasn't so stupid. It was kind of cool. It was kind of cool to be driving around the day. By the way, I call my car an RPC, a rolling prayer closet. Because that's the only time that I have any time that I can really speak the way I like to speak and the way I want to talk and listen to what God's got for me. And by the way, it doesn't matter who your God is, whatever, that's all up to you. I'm just saying I love talking to whatever's out there. In fact, with my sponsors, sometimes I suggest just talk to yourself. If you don't believe in God, just talk to yourself then. And then maybe that'll lead, sometimes that leads to it. But that's what I do, and I just roll down there. And I practice talking this talk tonight for a week in my car, which is the worst and stupidest thing that you can do. You're supposed to just be authentic. It's not a play. But you do it anyway. And I just started thinking about all the great things that happened through this program. Because we're to experience strength and hope. My hope is that I learn. See, in life, I believe you're either infecting somebody. In other words, I got infected by the people that I grew up with. They infected me with that they did the best that they possibly knew how. I don't blame them. I bless them now. I'm grateful for them. But they passed something on to me. Now, instead of me taking that and turning it around, I decided that I was going to turn around and infect you. And so the thing is, you can either infect somebody or you can inoculate somebody. So by inoculating, it means I take that crap that was given to me, turn it around, and somehow use it to lift you up rather than to tear you down and tear you apart, because that's what I'm an expert at. I'm an expert at just trying to just... character assassination is probably one of my biggest defects of character. I like nothing better than to sit around and find a bunch of other people who want to talk about other people. And I found that is the worst thing for my sobriety. For my sobriety, it's one of the worst things that I can do. Just to sit there and chat about somebody, particularly if they're not present. And even if they're present. And that's infecting them. That's infecting others. That's not inoculating them. The other thing that I was taught, besides those few pages, was how important humility is in this program. Because I didn't have it. So somebody told me once, in fact, maybe it was Pete might have said this, I don't know. But somebody told me that the only way you're going to get humility is you need to be humiliated. And that's crazy. But then that means you've got to put your heart out there, and someone's got to stamp on it, and you still got to step back and be okay and be at peace about it. And then that's when that kind of humility starts in our life, which allows us to see things as maybe God wants us to see it rather than how we're going to see it. And so that's what I tried to live that way and tried to live the program that way. And I tried to love that way. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful experience, particularly the last couple of years. I mean, I've got a wife right now. And by the way, I'm an expert, okay, because I've had a lot of them. I have a wife right now that is absolutely the most incredible person, and not so much how incredible she is incredible, but because I've come into the situation for the first time in my life and changed the game based on the past. In the past, I always lied. Everything. Where are you going? I don't know. I'm going to go out and hang out with my friends. What are you doing? I don't know. We're just going to play ball together. We're going to do something. Always a lie. Always something different. And always so much lies that I couldn't even keep track of them. And now the brutal honesty is what's really infused and informed my life with my wife right now. And it's not always good. Being brutally honest, it hurts sometimes. In fact, it hurts a lot, but I just found it to be a better way, and she's found it a better way. And together we formed a great bond and relationship. And it's rocky because as I had an old sponsor tell me, a grand sponsor told me years and years ago, you know, Jamie, two people who end up being together in the program is like two garbage trucks colliding. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, it's just two big freaking things of garbage just colliding. And then both of them trying to pick everything up together. And then trying to work a program. Because, I know with Chris, and she would say the same thing, I think, you know, that we want to be fixed. And so in our zeal for wanting to get fixed, we want to fix each other. And that's sometimes where there's the challenges. Because we learn stuff all day long of how to work on ourselves that we're so excited to share it with our spouses. And, you know, our spouses are going to sometimes say, you know what? Just get out of my space. I don't need you. I don't need you telling me what to do right now. So that's been a real, real blessing for us. And it's been a blessing being here up here in Hanford. I came up from San Diego, and I never thought I would. I remember the first, it was in June. It was super hot. I walked outside. It was like 180 degrees. And I know I'm exaggerating again. It was 174. but it was hot, right? And so I walked back inside the office, and I said, Don, I can't stay here, man. I got to go, man. I'm going back to San Diego. There's no way. He goes, just give it 2 weeks. You'll acclimate. And sure enough, he did. Now, this has to be about 116 before I get really kind of angry. So I don't know. I really like being here, and I like being among you guys, being in this program, and I look forward to seeing all of you down the road here. Thanks for having me tonight. I appreciate it. I guess we're going to open it up now.
Yeah.
And Jess, thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thanks.
So we are now going to start the discussion portion of our meeting. We would like to hear from as many different people as possible. So, again, just keep that in mind. Give everybody a chance to share. It is presently 8:15, so we've got about 45 minutes left. If you're here in the audience out here, I would ask you to please use your outdoor voice because we have just a single microphone up here. And what we'll try to do, let me give you the list here. You can kind of go with people in person and people online. And let me make a couple changes here to make this a little bit better.
So you want me to choose them?
Was everybody supposed to put their name on?
And you're here, Mike. You're on.
I didn't know if that was the post early.
No, you're here.
No.
You've got like all these cameras.
Yeah.
screens. And Bill, I wish you'd gotten a little more flattering light.
Yeah, right? Put a better angle on it for you.
So how many people are here on bar? Just one.
I think there's about six, ten, three right now. Aaron, Cassie, and Mike. Hi, guys.
All right. Okay.
Please. Why don't we start with Aaron? Aaron, are you there?
Hi. Sure. Aaron, alcoholic. How are you?
Hey, Aaron.
Hey, I loved your share. I could relate to a lot of what you were saying. My particular favorite, because really I haven't heard this from anybody but you so far, was that you thought it was totally normal to get wasted, be violent, fight with your family, and then, like, the next day everything's supposed to be just fine. Like, forget about it and move on. Like, it wasn't that big of a deal. So that's me.
Yeah.
I would get in crazy fights with my husband, screaming, yelling, acting like a lunatic. And the next day I'd wake up and he'd be all, you know, pissy. And I'd be like, what's wrong with you? And he'd be like, what's wrong with me? He's like, you psychoed out on me last night. I was like, so? Like, that's so normal. That's how I grew up. That was my household. You know, my father was an alcoholic. My brothers were alcoholics. And, you know, we just kind of beat the shit out of each other and, you know, then, you know, passed the bread. It wasn't, it was just so normal living like that. So I've just, you know, come to realize, like, within the past 5 years or so, I'm just like, oh, people don't live like that. That was just like you, and they don't think it's normal. Separated from my husband, you know, when I was dating somebody, and the first time I freaked out on him, he was just like, whoa, like, you're like psycho. And I still didn't get it. It's like, why is that psycho? You know, you fight, you make up. He's like, that's not how people fight. So I really appreciated that part of your story. And, yeah, also the progression, you know, how it comes on so quickly. Like, I've been on and off sober for many years. But this is my first attempt at AA. I kind of rebelled against it for many years because my dad's in the program. And the funny part about that story is when I was 18, I gave him a piece of paper and I said, if you want to save your marriage, call this number. And it was the number to AA. And you know, he took the piece of paper and he crumpled it up and threw it in my face, whatever. So I left. And then 5 years later, he came knocking on my apartment door and asked me to take him to his first meeting, which I did. And he was one and done. The man's been sober for 29 years and has helped so many people. But, you know, like, I resisted. I could do it myself. I wasn't going to do it his way because, you know, he wasn't there when I was growing up. But anyway, I'm in the program now, and what I realize is that, you know, these meetings are like a lifesaver to me. I didn't realize, I've taken to them like a fish to water, and this is what I needed all along. I mean, I've been binge watching this like it's Netflix. I can't even tell you how many times. This is my new Netflix. I mean, I'm in New York, so I'm in like AA meetings, California, because there's a 3-hour time difference, so you're not done yet. So, yeah, totally binge watching AA Zoom meetings. And what, you know, what I went to a meeting earlier tonight, in person meeting, and it was great because, like I said, like I would get into these violent rages, you know, alcoholic fights and stuff, and the next day, you know, I thought everything should just be fine and normal. But, you know, sometimes I didn't. Sometimes I was like, shit, you know, I'm in a lot of trouble. You know, I better, you know, cool it. So then I wouldn't drink for a while, and then I'd be like, why aren't I drinking? Like, all the crazy, all the trouble I got into, all the blackouts, or the lying, or the putting myself in danger, other people in danger. I forgot all about that. So the next time I had a drink, it was totally, it was like, it wasn't like I stopped, I haven't drank, you know, in a month because I needed a break. I haven't drank in a month because I got arrested, or haven't drank in a month because I got into a bar fight. You know, that wasn't in my head. It was just like, you know, I haven't drank in a month, you know, I'm gonna go out tonight. So what the meetings have done for me, which is great, is now I remember. I remember pain I've caused people. I remember the destructive behavior. I remember all the, you know, all the people, you know, that I've hurt with my drinking. That's going to keep me from drinking again, because I quickly, you know, I so easily forget. But, you know, the best part of my drinking story, and I love this part, is, you know, because I would just get completely wasted. And, of course, I black out, so in the morning, I never knew what I was going to get from my husband. Just, I didn't know if I was in trouble. I was constantly in trouble with my drinking, a grown, you know, 50-year-old woman. So when I would wake up in the morning, I would do my litmus test. And my litmus test would be, I would touch his foot with my foot. So if he pushed back on my foot, I wasn't so bad last night. If he pulled his foot away, I'm in trouble. But anyway, I appreciated your humor and your share, so it's nice to smile while you're going through this. Thank you.
Thanks, Sharon. Sean. Hey, Sean. You got a scream. Outdoor voice.
Oh, okay. I'm an alcoholic.
There you go.
I don't get loud like I used to. maybe some of it was new, but I've been around you since you came to Denver, I think. I was at your first meeting in him. And I liked you from the first time I met you. You're pretty cool. And you've been around. I really know what to say because you're just part of the family. And, you had a crazy story. And, some of it I can, your wives. And there's a lot of people in the program that have had a lot of wives. Or a lot of spouses. My dad's been in the program for a long time. It'll be 32 years next month. And he's been married 5 times. And, after 45 years, he and my mom are back together. My mother, she, in my opinion, she's an alcoholic, and she didn't really start drinking until early 40s, you know, on policy, so she's kind of pregnant and untreated alcoholic, so we're kind of watching, see what's going on with her, but, to see my mom and my dad back together, I kind of remember something, but I was 3 years old when they split up. And then they, you know, I was supposed to keep the family secret that they were seeing each other in. And then, my dad told me that said they're going to get married again on the day they marry. 50 years ago. Oh my God. So when he said, we're talking, when you talk about your marriages, I remember how my dad was married a lot too. And it just cracks me up. Sorry. And your stories about Mexico, it cracks me up. Some of your stories, I hear your sobriety and how you're doing, and how you're persevering, and how you love this in me now. It's wonderful to see you in here.
I enjoy you with my babies too. Alright, let me get them back. Thank you, Sean. Thanks a lot. Sean. Love this
young lady. Are you Leon Uncle?
Really?
Yeah. Thank you for your share. It actually relates to one of the couple things, but the one that Stephen and his member of the White Pocket thing. I've actually done that. And I was drinking it, and there was a group of people here, shoulder to shoulder, literally, because my room is nothing in it but my David, and we're all connected in one another with everybody. And I'm like, there's six tweezers in the light clock, it's just person next to me. So we all got shocked with the lights out. First thing about my mom, now my mom was, be a Cheryl. I'm like, why didn't that be me? you were talking about sponsorship and and all that, and it's crazy. I was late. Since I actually, got my first AA call, I guess you could say, and not a setup one where hey, this person call you or whatever. They came to me. I was the first person to came to me. I kind of shit, because I didn't feel like I was equipped to give them any advice, but. And she's sitting there talking and talking to me, and I text my sponsor, she's like, what do I do? Well, this is what I want to tell her, but I don't know if that's the right thing to tell somebody, because she's literally crying out for help, what do I do? And the sore part of the situation is that she was my counselor in a program I was in. And I took a lot of tools from her, and I learned a lot from her, and I still use it to this day, every day, those tools, and when my sponsor didn't answer me back, I took a breath and let God take over, because you can't let this woman walk out of this house and not say anything, or, because then what happens from there, you're going to feel guilty for whatever happens, because it was pretty on the edge, and I told her, I gave her the biggest hug I could give her, and I told her, I can't tell you what to do, but I can tell you that, to this day, what I learned from you, when I was in the house, all those tools, everything I used to the day. I am where I am today, and part of that is because of, my relationship I had with you at the time, and I told her, I said, so I have you date for part of my recovery, and I'm, 48 days, 48 days.
Awesome.
That's been a long rough ride. I'm up here. And people like Bill kept that hook in me. I'm grateful for the relationship I have. I just told her, I said, I can't tell you what to do, but she feels safe, and I guess when you're drinking and on other substances and something, sometimes things follow you that are not there, whatever, whatnot. And I told her how much she meant to me, my recovery, and I told her that she knows where she can go with this. She doesn't feel safe, but that's her choice to make that choice to go there, hoping that's what she did, but I can't make that choice for her. And after, right when she left, my posse sponsor calls me. I'm like, where would I need to do? Then I felt bad because she's got some family problems. I'm so sorry. she told me she confirmed that that's the best thing I could have said to her. And I feel good about what I said, but sometimes I feel like, if those relationships, those strong relationships that you have in support and the ones that I have good kinship with, I feel comfortable saying anything, and it's because of that comfort that I have with relationships and programs that I get a lot of my tools, a lot of it in the day, and I couldn't express that enough.
It's good to see new people. I like coming to new places. I didn't really like the Zoom meetings so much. For me, they were tough. Probably my character defects and somebody sharing. I'm watching everybody else. Can't do that online. That's just me. I still judge everybody. I'm working on it. But thanks for your lead. I've heard most of your story. I don't think it's changed any or anything like that, but as we go through it, new things arise and stuff like that. It's good to come here. It's good to come out and, like I said, see different people. I've had a lot of meetings, but it's not a bad thing to hear the same people, but it's refreshing to hear different people. Sean and Matt might know something like, same. That's not what I mean, but it's cool. I like these gigs. It's a cool house.
Yeah,
kind of different.
It's a really nice
vibe to it. I don't like being online, but whatever. That's what it is. I'm going to worst things on TV. So today, I guess, somewhat an attempt to be positive. Trying to do better than I have, you didn't really give us a topic, so I don't really know what to say. Just say, I've been here for a little bit, and the program works. I don't know if there's any newcomers online or if anybody here is or whatever, but I mean, the meetings are cool, but, I like to tell people it's, you really should get a sponsor and work discuss with somebody. That's where it gets better. I first came in here and I was here for I think about 8 months, not drinking and doing pretty good, but, when life started getting better and I figured I was all better and I had a lot of drinking and I got worse than it. And, a guy that goes to the meetings I go to who says, if you stop drinking, life will get better. It's just what it does. But if you work the steps, it will get better. And there's a difference, because life did get better because I'm not drinking. But when I work the steps, I got better. I'm not cured, but I'm better. I can't say enough about it. That's the only thing that's ever worked for me. I've done a lot of different things. I guess now what I know is that we all have measures. Get some for other people. Fellowship and go to the meetings every day and fellowship and do all this stuff. And hey, you want to work the steps? I'll work the steps. And, initially it's not going to work for me. It's just in my experience. Like you said, I too like to say, Brianita, and you could, and we should, and what I mean is me, and I'm talking about me, because I don't know what works for everybody. I know my experience, what happened with me, and what it did, and I know it's somewhat in the big book, I read it, and I have a sponsor that's helping me through the steps, and it is better. A lot better. I started out drinking like most people, and it was fun. And I don't know that I've had anybody in the program that said drinking or anything they did wasn't fun when they started. Maybe they're out there. It was miserable. The volunteers from the beginning, I don't know why I did it. I've never heard that.
Nah.
I long and short, it was fun. Sitting around a house like this, with the table, all those stories. But my mind glamorizes that as something still attainable. But I don't work this program, it's still there. Mm-hmm. And I've gone out and I'm here to tell you it's not there anymore for me.
Mm-hmm.
Once it's gone, it's gone. You can't make a pick of a cucumber. I'm bitter, I'm done. So when I go out there and get drunk and think it's fun, it just turns to crap quicker than it ever did.
Oh,
and as bad as it ever was. And that's the one thing that the biggest thing that got me sober was that it wasn't working anymore. That, once I got a couple days of not drinking, started going to meetings and talking to people, that I could actually get a good enough mind to realize that it wasn't working. I mean, I had a bottom. I had problems. I had things happen. I did step one backwards, Life was unmanageable. But I didn't know if I had a problem with alcohol. But, yeah, I did. But at the end of the day, it was just the biggest factor was no matter what I did, that window of having fun and then being drunk. There's not enough, and then you have fun for this long, and then you're too drunk. That window got real narrow. I didn't have enough, and then, hey, this is great. And that was gone. Then I was blacked out drinking for hours, being a fool, and not knowing what I did, like a lot of people said tonight. Yeah, it just isn't fun with it. So, I need to keep that straight in my head. And we went to a birthday party 2 weeks ago, and everybody was lining up, all these shots of tequila, doing different new drinks, and I'm like, wow, you ready to go home? Just saying, I don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
It was very enticing, and I don't have that. My obsession's been removed, but I don't need to face it. It's just not good. So, I'm not afraid of it, but I don't need to attempt it. So again, thanks for calling on me. Thanks for you.
Bye. Thanks, brother. Mike, you want to share? Hey, Mike.
Yeah. I listened to the guy, speaker tapes, and I
you know, there's a group you can go online, dog on a roof online, and but I was listening to a speaker of the man who sponsored the man that ruined my drinking and helped me get sober. And have unique ways of doing it. So really, but my sobriety date is March 15th of 94. I haven't had a drink, a marijuana, cigarette, armored, or a snort, a line of methamphetamine, you know, since then. And I got clean and sober in Alcoholics Anonymous from everything. And, you know, but I saw a movie this past week, or I even watched it again tonight, it was on. I saw the movie about the character. And then this morning, I woke up at 6:20 a.m. and I got to see the last 10 minutes of the original Mr. Rogers. They play on every his originals. And this one was from 88. And what a perfect, almost a perfect match, you know, next to Jesus. Big pastor. He didn't eat corn rips or lines or alcohol. He didn't cuss. Not that I know of. I mean, maybe Mr. Rogers had a martini that he liked at home or something. But I mean, this guy was like amazing. I mean, I might get it. He's just not like the norm of people. He was just such a you know, a Tom Hanks did a good trout play. And I'm not going to lie. I mean, I'm 27 plus years sober, and I cried the other night at my house when the scene came on where Mr. Rogers was in the subway and the kids, you know, looked over and the cops were sitting there holding on to the rails and Mr. Rogers, the kids ran away and they were singing his song, you know, where he would say, it's a beautiful day, you know, or whatever, and won't you eat, you know, and it's just like, I guess, I came down here tonight because I'm naked, you know, and I'm beaten. The book puts it really nice for us. It says selfish and self-centered. But, you know, what I've seen in Alcoholics Anonymous is, you know, people come in here that are just like, I mean, like a leech on someone in the Amazon jungle. That's to me what a drug and drug addict is. Okay. They're worse than, you know, remember the movie The Omen where they lifted Damien and saw his mother, it was the jackal and the, you know, I mean, the kind of people I drank with down in Orange County thought they were criminals and gangsters and they wore their hats forbidden, you know, Oakland Raiders and tattoos. I mean, let's just put it this way. Probably the people that really need the most help aren't here. They're in prison right now. And they're probably going to be there. A lot of them are dead. But I just remembered that when I'm feeling the way I'm feeling, I might have to help people. So that's why I came down here. Because, you know, because it's not about me. So I'm hungry. Hungry, angry, lonely, or tired is something I heard means. I'm really hungry. So if anybody wants to get something to eat after the meeting, I'm fine. But, you know, it's hard for people to go out and get and eat after meetings. Nobody likes to do that anymore, but that's how I got sober. So Mike, I'm
Mike, thank you. Thank you, Mike. Jordan?
My name's Jordan. I'm alcoholic.
Hello, Jordan.
Thank you for your share.
Thank you.
See, this week's been really interesting. I'm trying to figure out, like my program. I just finished my inpatient program last Saturday, so this is, like, the first real week, I guess, where I'm not having, you know, counselors or other people telling me what to do. So, like, it's, I mean, I've had my sponsor, he's actually helped me quite a bit. Thank you, Bill. But besides that, it's just like, it's cool, it's felt, it's different. I'm not going to say I'm doing everything right or perfect, because I know I'm not, but I'm doing the best that I can, I think, right now. Trying to go to a meeting every day, just staying away from those people, places, and things, you know, that just give me those triggers and stuff. And just taking suggestions and staying connected, I guess, best I can. But, I mean, I'm just grateful for AA, you know, it's actually helped me out quite a bit. And, so I got thank you.
Thank you, George. Very appreciate it. David?
David, an alcoholic?
David?
Thank you for your share, Jamie.
Thank you.
Usually when a person shares, I'm looking for things that we have in common, what can I identify with? And you and I are almost complete opposites. Outgoing, you have a church part of life, and I was this introvert, I stayed home alone, I drank home alone. But it was just like almost no commonality in the case. You pointed out a couple of things. You use AA as your social plot, right? My 6 years of drinking alcoholically, every night I was home alone drinking, and I needed a social life.
Mm.
And the first 2 years in AA, pretty much that's what I was treating this place as a social life. I've only had the one sponsor, but he's been very patient. He's been waiting me out, right? So I didn't do this. I didn't get to that fourth step until 2 years. That fourth and fifth step, even then, it was kind of a trivial, lightweight fourth step. But I still meet with him. I still meet every week, and he's still waiting me out. I did later do a substantial fourth step and fifth step with him, and now I'm on ninth step work. But you mentioned you got invited to speak here, and you're thinking about what you're going to say. The way things played out, Friday, a gentleman who was asked to speak in Fresno Saturday morning, but he got sick. So Friday, he had reached out to me. He's like, "Hey, I'm supposed to be there Saturday morning. Can you take the word?" It's like, "Okay, I can't." So yeah, 45 minutes, I'm driving. Right? And the same thing, during that thing, I really want to give people advice. And I really want to give people advice. And even this morning's daily reflection was, we don't give people advice. Right? We talk about our own experience. Ultimately, my little... at least one person at the meetings afterwards said I did an okay job, so, I think there was some hope. The one thing that I did hear recently in a meeting that is helpful to me, I think 3 weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago at a meeting, I was talking about, it was a good meeting. And one of the problems I have is I still suffer from some depression, right? And that depression comes from having this huge thing in my life that is just not good. So then I get depressed. And then because I'm depressed,
I don't want to deal with a huge thing in my life that is not good, which makes me depressed. Mm-hmm. And I'm just crazy, mm-hmm. right? And so I threw that out there in the meeting. I wouldn't say I was humiliated, but I have to be honest. I have to get honest. And so this is what's going on in my life. And I heard some great advice. One of the Alzheimer's said that during his morning meditation, he asks God, what's one little thing I can do to work on this problem? And it's essentially how do I eat an elephant one bite at a time? Right. So I've been practicing that, and the last 3 weeks, things are going better. That big thing is getting tinier a little bit at a time. And I wasn't able to talk about that on my own. Right? I needed to throw the problem out there to the group, and then, a member said, well, I've got something that works for me, and here's what he does. I'm trying it now, and it's working for me, and if anyone else needs to hear that kind of thing to be helpful, I hope I can share that and be helpful in that way. Well, thank you, Jamie, for your share.
Thanks.
I can say you and I are so different. You're a funny guy, and you do have a really good message of hope. So,
thank you, David. Thanks a lot for being here. Appreciate it. Well, my friend.
Yeah, we've reached the bottom of the barrel.
We've reached the very, very bottom.
Hey, I got some great news for you guys. Today is the last Sunday of October. Happy Halloween, for those of you that might have somehow missed that. And I forgot to mention it, but it's coming in handy right now. On the last Sunday of the month, we have a business meeting, so we close our meeting a little bit early. But not so early that I wouldn't be able to say a few things. So I'll just say this. There are Sanchez joined online late. You joined late, Mike, so you don't get to share tonight. Sorry. It's a guy online. So, I find myself remarkably similar to Jamie. I think we are cut from the same cloth. And David, you talked about how AA is really not about offering advice or opinions, but about sharing experience. And as I was listening to Jamie talk, and I just thought, my God, how is it possible that two people who, I mean, really, we've met remotely a few times, but we don't know each other in some sense. We certainly don't have a long history. How is it possible that the two of us could have so many experiences in common, and learn the same things by practicing these vague, I think they're written in a foreign language, steps. They seem to be, right? When I don't know about you guys, when you read the 12 steps and some of the literature around it, I thought, good God, why don't they just tell me what they're trying to say? And the funny thing is after having the sponsor take me through the process, I go back and I read it again, and I go, well, for crying out loud, it says exactly what it means, but I couldn't see it. I couldn't see it. Leah, I'm so happy for you. And I'm so proud of you. I'm going to give you an opinion. In my opinion, I think you had a textbook 12-step call today. I couldn't imagine anyone handling me any better than what you provided your friend. We're blessed when we get to be in the right place at the right time. And I don't get to do that if I don't do this. I don't get to be there. So that's quite enough out of me. I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the meeting. I'm sorry, Mr. Sanchez, you're going to have to come to another meeting to share your experience right now. I think we got everybody else. So. Cassie has consistently declined, but let's ask, Cassie, would you be open to sharing tonight? She's been a shy one.
It's Cassie. Yeah, she's going to stay shy on us.
Okay, so let me go ahead and close up the meeting, and then if you would please stay for our business meeting. It'll just be a couple minutes, very short and sweet, I promise. The Valley Group encourages sponsorship and service to our fellowship. We invite you to come early and stay after the meeting to get better acquainted with our fellowship. If anyone is in need of sponsorship or is available to sponsor,